This podcast was created by the Junior Cycle English team for the Junior Cycle Talks channel. This is the first of a two-part episode of Conversations from the Classroom, where we talk to English teacher Niall Daly. In this first part, Niall talks about engaging with learning outcomes, developing student vocabulary, exposing students to a wide variety of texts, and how department collaboration works in his context. Thanks very much for having a chat with us, Niall, about your school and your own teaching experience. So just to begin, if you wouldn't mind telling us about your school context and your own experience with Junior Cycle English.
I'm teaching in a school in North Dublin, and we're in our third year and we're heading into our fourth year now. We're in Dublin 13, and we have a little over 200 to 300 students at the moment. We're eventually going to grow to about 1,200. We've got a nice diverse range of students. Some have grown up in the local primary schools. We've got kids who've come in from different areas, mixture of EAL students. We've got a mixture of students with needs. As a teacher, it gives you an awful lot of things to work with and a lot of strengths to draw on from other kids and ways to kind of support them. As we've been teaching and growing, the school has been getting bigger. So I've been a teacher now for over 10 years. And when I came out of teacher training a few years ago, the new English course was coming in. Each year we've gotten to do first year, second year, third year, and build, reflect as each step we take. And we're very fortunate to be in that position. And it's been really helpful to get a chance to try out things and see what works as a staff and go from there.
You started teaching just before the new Junior Cycle specification was introduced. Genuinely, how have you found working with learning outcomes the last number of years?
So I was also fortunate to have had kind of that blank canvas coming in that while I was a student under the old course, seeing the new course. When you looked at the specification at first, it can be quite daunting. So there's some learning outcomes. One that always comes to mind, which is the reading for sustained pleasure over time. And what's been really nice is that through conversations at the JCT days and with staff and with various people in the different schools, we've actually found ways of building that into not just the lessons, but into the wider school community. Ideas about having the kind of like posters with different books we're all reading, little bingo cards for the kids to try reading, sharing a book that the teacher's reading. So finding ways to embed the outcome, not just in a, here's a lesson on how to read consistently, but make it an actual part of their day-to-day life so that if something does come up in that, maybe you do need to help the students with their writing and their language answering a question, but they've got something to draw on that's tangible to their lives, in, especially around the school.
You mentioned there, Niall, as well, that you have a number of EAL students in your context. How do you break down the vocabulary for those students?
You can use things like the Freyer model of breaking down vocabulary is often quite a good one for helping all the students really break down the nuances of vocabulary, giving them those where you break down the word, you give the meaning, you give the examples, the non-examples, and even maybe a visual clue for what something is. We often choose targeted when we're doing little passages. Rather than, especially the short stories, you might pick 5 target vocab words. Use that before you read it and use a bit of practice as a starter activity in grammar, and then let them see it in action as well and modeling those kind of samples there. And like that, you as the teacher, I suppose, are paying more attention to that individual student. You're giving them more of your direct time, but all the students are benefiting from those activities, and it's giving them that grammar focus and that learning focus. And hopefully then it's measurable for the students as they go. But obviously each student is different, and you do need to take into account when they've got EAL, it's just a language barrier. So I also teach history as well, and you can use the same approaches but target different aspects of the language to help the student pre-reading an activity, because maybe the vocabulary requirements in one subject or one topic might be less intensive than some of the others.
But they still see the link between the language in one subject and the language in another as well.
Yeah. Even if I don't have them as the teacher, when we collaborate as teachers across the school as much as possible, we can pick up on a few of these different approaches. And it's quite nice, we have that common approach to structuring our lessons across subjects, which is when the kids come in, there's consistency with a starter activity and how we present our learning outcomes for a lesson and how we target certain things. So each teacher has a level of freedom to design those activities, but it alleviates the variations that a student might have. It ensures some level of consistency with how as a staff we approach these things, and when the students come into every lesson, they know I've got that activity to do for each class. And it's nice because if you've got six lessons a day and I target five words, rather than being me targeting five words three times a week, it's every lesson, six lessons a day, they're getting five words. So the compound effect over time for vocabulary building and grammar focus is just, it becomes so much more enormous for the students. And we find our language acquisition starts to pick up speed a bit more because we're all being a bit consistent with this.
Well, you spoke there about cross-curricular collaboration. What about in your own English department then, Niall? How do you collaborate in your English department?
We have a really nice system going on at the moment. We spent a bit of time in one of our first meetings actually getting to know each other's tastes in English. And we found that this was a really nice way of seeing what strengths we had as a department and what our weak areas were, because we started finding out which of us were really into specific dramas, which of us were into specific texts. It was 10 minutes of an hour long meeting. And that 10 minutes has had such a profound impact as an English team, because now I know my colleague in the room down the hall, she is a drama expert. Not only did she loves drama, she is an absolute pro. She reads it in her free time, she performs it. And so that passion is coming across in her work. And when she's designing units and we're collaborating and sharing, if I have an idea about drama, she finds the way to go, this is how you can tweak it. And so I'm learning so much from her. Others, I'm a huge geek when it comes to graphic novels and things. And so seeing them on the course recently, it just sets me alight. And once my colleagues found this out, they're like, oh, wonderful, because we don't know where to start. So it's nice to be able to collaborate that way. And that's really fed into us designing units, because when we were trying to figure out what we wanted to teach the kids, and we got the kind of wider picture of all the learning outcomes, we started to see where are the moments where we can get that passion across. And so it's really nice that we can bounce off each other that way. And it's been feeding into a really nice atmosphere of not just planning better, but I think even just getting to know each other as a staff, which is sometimes as a team, I don't think it's stuff we overlook, but I think it's something that if you can build that bond with your colleagues, you can sometimes find a connection for stuff that you didn't realize you had.
Is there anything else that informs your text choice besides your own love in the department for a particular book? So what informs your text choice in general?
Yeah, so I sometimes give them to students of mine in my form class. We have some of the voracious readers and they're very good for very honest feedback. So building in the student voice is a nice one as well. And some kids like that secret mission of going, would you read that and tell me what, like, I found this book and I think you'd like it. You tell me what you think. And we gave a couple of kids from different classes and year groups the books, and not always the ones who are just into the reading. Sometimes we find the kids as well. We're like, hey, I want to give this a try. And they get back to us and they're very honest with their feedback. And they don't see it as an extra assignment. It's just one of those, they feel a bit, kids feel a bit privileged and a bit honored. When we're thinking of things that we also survey all the kids. So apart from doing that kind of micro thing, we also send out an anonymous one. We use technology, we use Google Forms to get a bit of feedback on what they liked previously and what they've studied in school and what kind of genres are coming up, what they'd like to see. And we found that kids are exceptionally honest when it comes to filling out a survey. If you make it anonymous, which I think is nice to do as well, because then the kids feel they can be more honest. And we feel we get more honest quantitative feedback from them and qualitative feedback from them, because they give us the much more specifics. They're more willing to say that they read a particular genre or they're into something if it maybe doesn't have their name attached. We try and do it at the end of the year. We did it last year. It's doing it at the start of the year. There is so much going on that the forms fill it out and get it back to the teacher, and then that's that. Whereas when getting it at the end of the year now, especially when we'll be coming into the summer and having a bit more time to tease out ideas and think of things, it lets us see what books kids really responded to a little while after they've read it.
Can I ask you then about planning for Junior Cycle English? What does it look like for you in your school context? How do you plan units of learning?
We take the whole picture of third, second and first year, and we see where are the moments of things that we have to get done. Where are the points where there's not as much flexibility with certain things? So for example, you can't do CBA1 in third year, so it has to be in second year. So we block out where that is, and we block out those key points. And then we take the whole year and then we see what kind of time frame we have for something. So we want to often try and make sure that our units, that they're not choppy and kind of bitty in places. We sometimes see that's a nice place to go. We could do like a one-off or you could try something a bit different there in that little space. And we try and see naturally where things work the best. So when we're planning, we've been working on a speech writing unit. We did that in advance of CBA1 and we found that that married quite well together. Now that's not spending 5 weeks writing speeches. That's going, right, why don't we analyze a speech as part of a comprehension? Why don't we practice recording speeches and getting students an experience of being recorded in a very low stakes environment? Because I always feel as though CBA 1 should never really be the first time a kid feels like they're being recorded. It should be as normalized as possible for them by the time they get to that stage. That helps with the confidence. They've heard their voice, they've seen themselves practice. And then we just start narrowing it down into the blocks and going, how much time do we have? What learning outcomes and what do we want the students to achieve? And then what can we do to get them there? So really what we always want to do is go, what are our kids going to be able to do by the end of this? Is there someone in the department who's a bit more of the pro and can guide the rest of us to make sure we're on the right track? And then we split things up and then bring them back and maybe buddy up to get a bit of feedback. I know that I don't need to work with every teacher in the department to make sure our unit's okay. If I just get someone else to check with me, and then we can present it to the rest of the department. We're just trying to build up on that. It's quite nice, actually, in one way, that we're not just going to plan something and then say, that's that done, let's do that forever. That we are constantly evolving and changing with the needs of our students in mind. We're all different ages and different ranges and different backgrounds and different interests, but we just try and make sure that we're humans too. And so we try and make sure that we're humans first and that we talk to each other and work together, that it's all built on mutual respect. I think it's important to treat everyone with respect and to feel that they've been heard and they can get a chance to say stuff, because that's only going to feed into better teaching.
This conversation will continue with Niall Daly in our next episode of Conversations from the Classroom, where we will focus on motivating students to write, the importance of modelling the writing process, the role of feedback, and the use of digital technology to support editing.